Frankly, dear, your modesty reveals to me self-appraisal often makes us sad. And if I add your funny face appeals to me, please don't think I've suddenly gone mad. You have all the qualities of Peter Pan. I'd go far before I'd find a sweeter pan. I love your funny face, your sunny, funny face, for you're a cutie with more than beauty. You've got a lot of personality for me.
Music from Funny Face, 1957, starring Audrey Hepburn and Fred Astaire. 30 years after Funny Face, Audrey Hepburn was in Australia in a completely different role as ambassador for UNICEF. Audrey had just returned from the Sudan and she joined Margaret Throsby.
I'll never forget the camps I've just visited now in the Sudan. One had 20,000 people in it, another had 17, another 8,000. And three quarters of them are children. But these were children that had already been there for a little while, were getting a minimum of food and medication. But the cheer and the gaiety of these children, the smiles, thrilled to see somebody extremely affectionate. Even if they've lost their parents, maybe all the more, they need every smile they can receive and every hug they can, you know. That is absolutely extraordinary, and that's the greatest lesson of all.
Do you think having children yourself has made a difference to this job for you?
I know, I've always been potty about children, yes, but I think most of us are. I don't think you have to have your own child to love a child. I have a passion for nature, I have a passion for animals, everything that has to do with life. Children are so extraordinary. Their resilience, their courage, their strength is a lesson to us all. Mind you, while I was there, what was a different matter with the newcomers, because very briefly, the Sudan has suffered from a civil war in the last 6 years, and practically the whole civilian population is displaced. Mm. Those that are going south, those are going north, searching for food and searching for safety. And those people walk for months living off nothing, I don't know, roots and berries, and finally they reach these camps. And that's a different sight, because these are phantoms carrying their babies, which, I mean, it's not to be described. Mm. And there was this story that happened that day, and I was chatting with, this was Irish Concern, I think. I was asking a bit about, you know, what had happened in the last few hours. And she said, you know, but they're coming in every minute. Sometimes it's a few, sometimes it's 10 or 12, sometimes it's 100. And we had this one little family, a man, his wife and a child. The man seemed the worst off, so we took care of him right away and medicated and everything. While we were taking care of him, his wife and child died just in a few minutes. They'd gotten there, they'd managed to get there, but then they just... And that had happened just, you know, a few hours before I got there. And the night we spent in Mouglad, where this big, big camp is, that night, 13 people died of thirst, in spite of the fact that there was water on, you know, in the ground, but just one little source, which for 20,000 people, even if you can give them little by little, you have to find it, you have to get there.
It must all seem, I don't want to concentrate on your past life, but it must all seem like a different world from the glamour of Hollywood, does it?
It's all one world. I've always known that there was, you know, those who have and those who have not. I've always known that there are those who are privileged. And those who, I've seen so much of it all my life. Of course, as a child living through a war, I saw everything.
You came in touch with UNICEF yourself, didn't you? Then?
Right after the war, yes, because they bailed out all the children that were very undernourished,
like
myself.
Were you in Holland, is it?
In Holland, yes. Uh-huh. But during the war, I mean, I saw people, much of my family were taken off by the Germans. I saw children being loaded into cattle trucks and taken off to the camps.
You saw
Jewish
there?
Children, oh, mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. This happened constantly. You'd take a train to go to the next city and one of these big cattle trains would pull in, and just over the big wooden doors you could see these faces, and they'd load some more people in with their children and everything. I've heard screams from prisons where we knew that people from the underground were being tortured. Both my brothers were in the underground. Lot of people were starving. It's a great equalizer, a war.
Mm.
Everybody was.
But there
suffering.
You are. It's interesting to look at your life as a span so far, mm-hmm. that early experience. And
but it's a thread through your life. You never forget it.
No, of course you don't forget it. But that there was a period in the middle where you experienced the opposite. I mean, my perception of you is that you experienced the opposite with the fame and the glamour and the all
because I
that.
Had food and I had comfort and I have to this day and I had security. And most importantly, I have freedom. That's something that, unless you've been without it, you can never really appreciate enough.
But I'm wondering whether that experience...
But that's what I mean. 5 years of German occupation.
Mm.
I mean, after the first year, we knew where we were at, so to speak. And everybody sort of just, clammed up and went underground and you couldn't speak freely and you weren't allowed to listen to radios and the wrong word could...
Mm.
It's
unimaginable for us Aussies.
And I grew up that way. Yeah. I grew up that way, knowing that we were all prisoners. We were an occupied country. And as you may know, Holland was one of the worst because we were occupied by the SS, not by just the military.
But it's interesting that you've come you've returned in a way to...
It doesn't seem like a circle to me. It's just that at different periods in my life, I've been in touch with different areas of life, of the world. Yes, my life changed for the better, but you always have that undercurrent of your neighbor next door who might be suffering, or somebody in another country, or a friend, or that never goes away.
Mm.
The memories don't, nor does the presence of suffering, You can have it right near you. You don't have to go to Africa.
Yes, you talk about street children, and there are plenty living in the streets around these studios.
Right, and in America, and... We have enormous problems, as you know. The world is all one big place, but I think awareness is the secret to, maybe giving a hand.
Mm. I'm interested also that you apparently, this is hearsay, but that you apparently had no difficulty in opting for raising children rather than trying to juggle being a movie star and a mother.
I don't want to be made to sound virtuous. It was a very knowing and... If you like, selfish decision. It's what made me happier was to stay home with my children. It was not a sacrifice because I thought I should take care of my children.
No, I don't. I would never emphasize that what a sacrifice you made because
some people think, was it a great sacrifice to give up your career?
I think that it's very for women who do try who feel pressed from both sides.
Yeah.
It's very helpful to hear that someone could quite unequivocally make that decision.
Yeah. Say, also, no, I could afford to, mind you.
Yes, which is important.
I could financially. Do it.
But
a lot of
film stars would find it hard to give up the glamour and the fame.
Yeah, except that many film stars, had it been my case, had I been living in Hollywood, it would have been a different matter. I would have seen my child in the morning, at night, and maybe, certainly at weekends and on days off.
Mm.
And you don't have to be with your child all day long.
Mm.
I never have been. But the fact was that I was living in Europe. A movie always meant going to Paris, Italy, Mexico, Africa. So really leaving home and being away for 2 or 3 months, sometimes 4 or 5. And that's what I didn't want to do, you see.
Mm.
So if you can possibly work in the same town as where you live, that makes life easier. But that's why I had to make this choice.
Mm. All right, we've nearly run out of time. Tell me, how long do we have you in Australia? Is this your first visit to
Down Under?
Yes,
and it's very frustrating because I'm dying to take off and go and, see this country, which is known for its beauty, and here I am. But I'm seeing maybe a part of Australia that other people won't know, or who come here to go and see the beautiful reef and the rocks and so forth and the bays. And I'm in these few days I've been in Australia, I've come into contact with such warmth and marvelous people and a spirit that I feared, maybe it was disappearing, and I know that's done me a great deal of good, and so I'm glad to know that part of Australia. Next time I'll come back and see the dolphins.
Come incognito, although I dare say that's probably fairly hard.
Oh, no, I don't mind.
Audrey Hepburn, who's an ambassador, or the ambassador, great ambassador for UNICEF.
This is Replay, ABC Radio National.